Life Scientific currently employs just over 80 people, and more than 30 of those are scientists. And as a company, we have an annual turnover of just over 60 million euros currently. We've had huge growth over the last few years and continue to grow. Actually, now is a really exciting time for us. We're just looking at business in Canada. We have our first registration of prothioconazole in America. We operate in several European countries, as well as the UK and obviously in Ireland.
The high yields in Ireland are part of our competitive advantage and are only possible by the use of plant protection products, or iChems. The development of new plant protection products is vital to keep up with how nature changes. And as these new products cycle through the patent stage to the development of like-me or generic products, this will hopefully help the competitiveness of our industry. You are listening to the latest episode of The Tillage Edge with me, Michael Hennessy. We would really appreciate it if you could listen, follow, and give us a review on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. As always, it's great to hear of the development of new Irish companies which can compete internationally, and one such company is Life Scientific, who formulate, manufacture, and sell generic plant protection products across the globe, and who won the EY Entrepreneur of the Year Award in 2020. I'm delighted to be joined by Ruth Stanley, the Ireland and UK country manager in Life Scientific, to tell us a bit more about the company, and also by Scott Lovell from CropLink, who distributes some of the products in Ireland. Ruth, can I come to you first? You might just tell us a little bit about Life Scientific in terms of the size and where the company operates and that kind of thing.
Life Scientific, it was established by an Irish lady called Nicola Mitchell. It was established in 1995. And it's based next door to the UCD campus, just outside Dublin. We have really strong links as a company with the university, with UCD, and also actually with Enterprise Ireland. Life Scientific currently employs just over 80 people. More than 30 of those are scientists. So that should sort of give you a really strong impression of the nature of the company, and hence the name Life Scientific. And as a company, we have an annual turnover of just over 60 million euros currently. We've had huge growth over the last few years and continue to grow. Actually, now is a really exciting time for us. We're just looking at business in Canada. We have our first registration of prothioconazole in America. We operate in several European countries, as well as the UK and obviously in Ireland.
The company is primarily focused on ag chems, or is there other arms to the company as well?
It's ag chems. So we are a generics, and we're an off-patent producer of plant protection products, but a whole range of plant protection products. So we have fungicides, herbicides, plant growth regulation products. We have a broad range, but it's all agricultural chemicals.
Okay. So just in terms of that, just to give people an idea about the generics, or that's really to do with a molecule that's gone off patent that you've decided to look at and manufacture on the off-patent scenario. You might just go through a little bit in terms of the evolution of a chemical, if you like, going through its process, coming out the fire side, and where you kind of latch onto it to develop it from there.
Sure. So basically, there are two types of agrochemical companies. You've got the R&D manufacturers, Bayer, Syngenta, BSF, and then you've got the sort of generic producers such as Life Scientific. The R&D companies rely on sort of discovering new active ingredients and formulating those into commercial products. And then the generic companies would wait until those products have come off patent, and then they would be free to be manufactured by companies such as Life Scientific. So generally, the innovators, if you like, the R&D companies, they would bring a new product to market that costs a huge amount of money. And so they would need to protect their investment on that and hence put a patent on that product. And generally, the patent might last around 20 years. And they would put that patent on from sort of first discovery, if you like. So it'd probably then take a few years to get to market. And then the generics are free to copy or recreate that product after the patent has expired. And that's what we would do. And that's the first start point for Life Scientific, is looking at the patents. What can we look at? And our process is called reverse engineering. So what can we reverse engineer? What is available for us to look at in the market? And that's our sort of starting point, looking at the patents around the product, data protection, uses of that product, and combination of different ingredients, formulation, how it's made. You can have a range of different patents on one product and protecting the different aspects of that product, and they all need to be free before a generic company can produce the same thing.
Okay, so it's not necessarily a case where, say, I don't know, prothioconazole or one of those kind of molecules that are there, obviously, in the, when it went first out to market, it's not just a molecule in the can. There's wetters and there's all sorts of other enhancers to make sure it actually works within the plant. You have to make sure that everything is free within that, if you like, to make it work. Or do you just take the molecule and then decide to go after how you're going to formulate it better yourselves?
So Life Scientific have a really unique way of how we recreate those products. And what we do here is we look at everything in the can. And so you're right, the wetters, the antifoamers, the active ingredient, everything that's in that can, we look at various scientific processes to identify those products, those ingredients. We can also identify how those ingredients are put together, in which order, in which quantities. So when we recreate the product, we've basically reverse engineered it. We've taken the reference product, we've taken it to bits, we found out exactly what's in it, how it's been formulated, put together, and then we recreate that product. And as I say, that process is unique to Life Scientific. So when we take our new product to the authorities, PCRD, we only need to prove that the product is the same. So other generic companies would potentially do years worth of trials to make sure the product is safe, to make sure the product is works correctly, to make sure it's safe to use, safe for the environment. So for Life Scientific, all we need to do, and I'm making it sound easy and it's not, but all we need to do is go to the authorities and prove that the product is the same, because they've already seen the data from the reference product that it works and that it's safe for the environment. So all we need to do is prove that the product is the same. And then once we get authorization, we're free to sell on the market.
And what sort of timescale is that route in terms of deciding you're going to go after a particular product and yes, now we have something to present to the regulators?
And so different products take different amounts of time. And some of it is also dependent on how busy the regulators are. So sometimes it can take us sort of 12 months to, by the time we sort of put a product in, to get authorization for it, because they need to look at all that data and make sure that the product is comparable to the reference product. So sometimes that process can take a huge amount of time. It's difficult to say, because every product is different, and different stages of the process take different amounts of time, but it can be 6 months to 2 years potentially.
Okay, so there's still a good bit of work to be done, even with a molecule in your hands kind of thing. What I was going to ask you was around, how does a company like yours decide on the particular plant protection product that you're going to go after? Obviously, they're all off patent, so you have a suite of stuff in front of you. Loads of things are off patent. How do you decide which ones you're going to go after?
That's a really good question. So lots of different factors. We need to make sure that we're giving farmers as much choice as possible to produce food in a sustainable way at good costs. So we want to make sure that the products that we're producing are are good and are going to have a place in the market for the next few years. We don't really want to create a one-hit wonder, something that's going to build up resistance really quickly, or something which is going to be superseded by new things, and there's going to be no place for it. So looking into the market to see the history of that product, how much it's been used, where it's been used, different crops that it can be used on. So if you are producing a product which can only be used on grapes or borage or triticale, then the market for that is very small. But if we find a product that can be used, like your example of prothioconazole, that can be used in cereals and oilseed rape, and it's used in sort of large quantities across a range of crops, then the market for that obviously is more attractive. So an attractive commercial market, making sure that it's off patent, making sure that it works with the newer things. So something like prothioconazole could be a great partner product, even with the newer chemistry that is coming out from the R&D manufacturers. You wouldn't want to rely on that new chemistry because you want to make sure it's protected. You want to make sure you're not overdoing it from a cost point of view. You want to make sure the resistance for the disease or the weed, whatever you're using it for, is protected. So to mix it with something else is always good farming practice. So looking at those options as well. So there's lots of different options that go into how do we decide whether we make it or not. And also, because we're active in so many different countries, is this product only going to be sold in Ireland, or could we sell this product in Ireland, in the UK, in France, in Spain, in Italy, in Germany? Is there a market for it everywhere? Which obviously makes it even more attractive.
So, Scott, just in terms of the formulation or the bringing together of a generic product, as was described there by Ruth, how is it different, I suppose, from what Life Scientific is doing in comparison to the other generic makers?
Okay, Michael. Well, we're dealing with a number of different suppliers, and we would have a number of those have good reputations, and we're very happy with their formulations. But effectively, what they're doing, so they're getting the active ingredient goes off patent, and they're taking that active ingredient, and they're going to their formulators, which can be in-house or can be third party, and they're saying, make that product stable. So they're adding in whatever surfactants, wetters, emulsifiers, etc., that are required to make the product stable. And then once they have that, because that's completely different outside of the active ingredient to the what they call the reference product or the branded product that was there first day, they then have to go away and do trials on the efficacy and on the environmental profile of that product. Whereas Life Scientific take the original and they do their R&D piece to break down exactly what's in it, then match that and source those as well as the active ingredients, the source of that, but also those surfactants and wetters and emulsifiers and lots of other things that I wouldn't be very familiar with. They source exactly the same and put that recipe together. So when it comes out, it's chemically identical to the reference product. And when they hand that to the authority, which in Ireland is the Pesticide Registration and Control Division, PRCD, they test that against the reference product and it's identical chemically. So that's quite different from the other generics. And that's not saying, as I say, that the other generics aren't good products also. They can be, and then there might be some that aren't so much, but in effect, they are different products. They might contain the same amount of active ingredient, but they're different products. Whereas the reverse engineering process that Life Scientific are doing is effectively producing a clone of that product. And as a marketer of their products, that gives us great confidence to be able to say to our customers and to the growers that this product will perform in the field identically to what the reference product does.
Okay, so in essence, what you're trying to do is you're trying to, I suppose, through reverse engineering, try to gather all of the R&D, I suppose, that was done by the original company to formulate that, active ingredient as well as ever it could have been formulated by that parent company.
Exactly. And, you know, they do go to quite a lot of different lengths to discover exactly what's in it. I mean, some of the equipment that they have above is cutting edge and state of the art, and I expect not very cheap either. But, you know, what that produces then is the exact details and the chemical reference points, primarily through chromatography, but a lot of other things as well. So as I say, in terms of those individual components or ingredients outside of the active ingredient, that they're also matching those exactly, not just the active ingredient.
And is all the R&D done in Ireland, or is Ireland only one office?
So the headquarters is in Ireland, and the lab facilities are in Ireland. And what we do there is we do all the spectrometry, the chromatography, all the equipment, the process of taking the reference material to pieces and looking at it and how it all works. That's all done in Ireland. We make up small batches of the products in Ireland. So if you wanted a few litres of a particular product, we can make that up in the offices in Ireland. But when we scale up production, so when we're making, you know, tens of thousands of litres, then that goes out to tolling manufacturers and generally in Europe.
Okay, so it's pretty much European based then, in terms of that, none of that ends up in China or anywhere, it's European based?
So active ingredient can be bought from China. We source the best actives that we can find, and generally quite a lot of that at the moment is coming out of China. So the active ingredient predominantly would come from China, and then it would be brought over into Europe to be scaled up into production.
So I was under the impression that you made the actives. Somebody else makes the actives.
The actives are bought. So the actives, so we identify what they are, where they come from, and specific manufacturers, we would identify those and then go to those manufacturers or an equivalent manufacturer to buy that material. And then that material is put together, a bit like the ingredients for a cake, if you like, putting together the ingredients of a cake to the right recipe and making that to sell commercially.
Okay, so it's the recipe then is what you're really in the business of, making sure that that's right. That's what you're after, is it?
That's got to be absolutely perfect. Yeah, that's right. Got to be absolutely perfect.
Okay. Scott, obviously you're in CropLink. You deal with a lot of generic kind of material as well. You might give us a bit of an overview as regards the generic market in Ireland.
Sure, Michael. And I suppose the first thing to say is that I think there's a strong place for both the new branded chemistry and the generic post-patent chemistry to work side by side. And what you'd find is that most merchants and co-ops stock both, because they probably need both. And I think there's a demand and a place for both. So one of the CropLink is probably the biggest distributor of post-patent generic chemicals in Ireland. But there are several other competitors or other companies doing the same. And there, worldwide, and certainly in Europe, there's a huge number of producers and companies that manufacture and market those generics post-patent material. And because Ireland is part of the EU, and because of what's known as mutual recognition, we get an awful lot of access. Even though we're a relatively small market, we get a lot of access, and quite often quite very competitive pricing as well, because somebody might be looking to register in Ireland and then mutually recognize it in a bigger market like France or Germany, for example.
As Ruth was saying there earlier, that there's no huge need for extra trials to get that product particularly onto the market. But I suppose there's always a bit of doubt in a farmer's mind. I'm going from an established brand, whatever it might be, whether it's from some of the bigger companies, but now I'm going to a generic-y kind of thing, and they're might need convincing. It might necessarily be convincing of the PCRD. They might be happy out that they're exactly the same. Is there a need for that, do you think, to try and get people over the line with some of those products?
Well, look, to be honest, Michael, it's the same as anything. There are some very good generics and there are some maybe not so good generics. I suppose that's the way of putting it. Some of the generic companies worldwide are very, very big. You know, they might be you know, fourth, fifth in the world in terms of plant product production. So they don't get that big if they're producing, for want of a better term, bad product. You know what I mean? That it takes a lot of effort. There's a lot of quality control in a lot of the generics as well. But absolutely, of course, there can be a little bit of a doubt first day. And it's one of the reasons why we try to partner with generic companies that have a track record. And you know, one of the beauties of Life Scientific, which we would consider a key partner, is what they're making is, as they put it, the same as the branded product, and it gives you real confidence in the formulation and the tank mixing, so that when you're selling to the merchant and the merchant selling to the grower and the grower is using it on farm, that they're going to have something that's going to perform in the field. Because you know, we know what the spray season gets like in Ireland. There's a lot of jobs to be done in a short period of time, and the last thing you need is a problem with a tank mix.
Just on, maybe it's a question to both of you, maybe a little bit, just in terms of the future and what that looks like. I mean, there's lots of pressure certainly on the in the industry to reduce the amount of plant production products, even though the SUD or SUR has fallen, but it's probably not going to go away necessarily, as in that drive to reduce pesticides. Is there newer technologies that you can look at alongside some of the generics, such as microencapsulation or other various different technologies that may well come down along the line?
I suppose, you know, if you go back to, first of all, Michael, farmers have, because they're competing in a world market, you know, if we take, first of all, the arable market, you know, you're competing in a world market, input costs are rising, grain price, well, certainly in 2024 is under pressure. So farmers are going to do what they can to get, you know, they're get the inputs right, but certainly not to overuse them. I think that's the first thing worth saying. The second thing is, certainly this is where it's so important that we have the new active ingredients from a sustainability point of view. And I use that sustainability in a very broad sense. Number one, that farmers are able to stay in business, that it's going to control some of the diseases. Like, we've got huge pressure from the likes of Septorian wheat, or let's say late potato blight, is you know, something that mutates so often that it's important that we come up with newer chemistries. And then it's about partnering that, those maybe, or maybe interdispersing those with post patent chemistry that can deliver value to the farmer. And yeah, I mean, in terms of, and maybe Ruth will answer that better, typically the newer chemistry, because it is having to go over a higher and higher bar, that in terms of, you know, the environmental profile, the grams of active, etc., that's getting there anyway. So the amount is being reduced, both from a commercial sense by the grower and by the research and the bar that's now needs to be cleared from an environmental point of view.
Couple of things from my side, really. So the portfolio that we have at the minute for Life Scientific has been based on reverse engineering. So all the products we have on the market are essentially the same as a reference product. What we're trying to do and trying to look at is, we're trying to develop as broad a portfolio as possible, finding solutions for farmers, finding solutions for problems that we don't know there are solutions for yet. And actually, part of that process is looking at things that are completely new. So we are, I'm saying, fingers crossed, in the next few days, I'm hoping we'll get a product registration in Ireland for something that's completely new. So it's not a product that's on the market already. It's a mixture of two existing active ingredients, but we've co-formulated them together into a product that is not currently on the market and is new. And we will be increasingly looking at new solutions and new ways of doing things and trying to offer products which aren't available currently and to try and do something a little bit different.
Okay, and I know it kind of goes against maybe what we said earlier, but I'd say there's an awful lot of farmers in the country would be very happy if you looked at some of the minor use stuff as well. But obviously that doesn't have maybe quite the same volume, and maybe there's not quite the same interest. But there's certainly a need and a want for lots of those kind of products as well. But look, thanks very much, Ruth and Scott, for your time. Delighted we could just chat along about the generics and kind of where they are in the Irish market and where they might fit into a farmer's armory for the year ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So my thanks to Ruth and Scott for joining me on the podcast. So as usual, if you enjoyed the podcast, then recommend it to a friend or colleague. And as always, rate, review and follow on Apple or Spotify so you never miss an episode. And for more information, go to chagas.ie. I'm Michael Hennessy. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week with more tillage news and advice.